Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing okay, but I sense a presence. A presence I haven't felt since. Corey, do we have a guest in the studio?
Why, yes, we do. Special guest. Please sign in and let the audience know who you are.
An ominous presence. It is Eric Childs. Man, just
wait
the
a minute.
Voice. How strange.
Is it the same Eric Childs we've talked about who owns Mind Eyes Comics that used to be Egan?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. A first time.
I don't know how I got wrangled into that one.
Yeah. Hey, you want to be on our podcast? Sure. We're tough sells, I'll tell you.
You want to own a comic shop? Sure.
We'll tell you 25 reasons why you shouldn't. Do it anyways. So before we get going, I always ask the question of any of our guests, what is your secret comic book origin? In other words, what is it that got you reading comics, collecting comics, and kept you in comics?
My comic book origin goes all the way back to the 80s in Kansas City, Missouri, in the hot summer humid heat, living in a little tiny cottage on the block. And I had two older brothers, and they were both, fortunately for me, into comic books. So I got pummeled quite a bit being the younger sibling of a sibling that's 9 years older than me and a sibling that's 10 years older than me, saying, don't touch these comic books, but look how cool they are.
You can look, but you can't touch.
That's right. And so that was that's how I got into it, from them, those guys.
Do you know, was there a certain character? Was it just the allure of don't touch forbidden fruit?
For me, it would be, honestly, the big three for me originally is going to be Superman, Spider-Man, and Incredible Hulk. And I don't know which order it was of which. I don't know which one I was introduced first, but I do know that Superman is my classic. That is the person I reference as my favorite superhero.
Now, did you eventually start buying your own comics, or did you just kind of sneak whatever your brother got?
That never happened.
If your brothers are listening, it never happened.
It never happened. I tried, and it got to the point where they would hang up like Michael Jackson Thriller posters in the hallway because their room was in the attic. And so they'd hang up these zombie posters like George Romero and Michael Jackson with the zombies behind them. And my younger brother and I, we would like close our eyes and say, okay, let's just try to get to the top steps. And then we're past those posters. And it just seemed like forever. And we'd always open our eyes and then they'd be surrounded by zombie posters on either side of the wall and just go tumbling back down the steps. So we never quite made it to the comics. But I started getting my own comics through school. My teacher, my fourth grade teacher, Miss Devani, she knew that I was like this artistic, creative kid that was more interested in creating and wanted to make comics myself. And so she thought, well, I'm going to encourage this kid with comics to, you know, focus more on his actual work. And so she loaded some comics into a drawer and said, hey, take a look at this. Pull that thing open. And I was like, what the heck? And she's like, you can pick one of these if you complete, you know, whatever assignments for whatever period of time. And so that's how I started getting my first, like, my own comics. And actually, before that, my first comic was during, you remember in the 80s when they would do all the, like, take a bite out of crime or don't do drugs campaigns and all that kind of stuff. There was a comic that had Spider-Man, Storm, and it was like the Power something. I remember there was like a white smoke trail. I can't remember what issue it was, but it was a promo comic to prevent kids from getting involved in crime and doing drugs and whatnot. And I remember on the cover, there's a kid wearing a yellow jersey with like a green number on it holding a basketball. And that was like Spider-Man and other stuff. But maybe you guys remember what that
was. Did it stop you from doing drugs?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I was going to say, because one of my favorite statistics is kids who've gone through D.A.R.E. are yes. more likely to smoke pot than ones who haven't.
Like, so you mean to tell me this drug does what? So, but yeah, that was my first, the first comic I ever bought, actually, wasn't even with my money, just because the store was too far away for me to get there or whatever. It was, I was begging and begging my mom for a comic, and it was a Cracked magazine. And that was my first purchased, because the store that we went to actually didn't have comic books. It had the Cracked magazine and Mad magazine.
And you chose Cracked instead of Mad.
I did. It was way more exciting.
Well, I imagine if it was Cracked in the 80s, it was like 75% drawn by John Severin.
Oh, yeah.
John Severin actually, was, and Bill Ward drew the other 25%.
I remember one of my favorite issues was the spoof on Sledgehammer. It had Sledgehammer and RoboCop. RoboCop had like roller skates on.
So somehow you made it to the Twin Cities.
I did. My family moved here in 1991. Not directly from Kansas City. We made a pit stop for a year in Colorado.
Where in Colorado?
Lived in a city called Lakewood.
And did you make it to Mile High Comics?
All the time.
Oh, wow. Went up on me.
All the time when we lived there. So a couple things for us comic geeks, or at least this comic geek in particular, myself, was my parents were keen to the fact that I loved martial arts and comic books. So any state we went to, they would try to find a martial arts school, like a karate school, and then they would try to find a place to get comic books.
Now, when you made it to Minnesota,
yep.
What was one of the first stores you were able to visit?
Comic Archives in Apple Valley.
Oh, Brent's old store, yeah.
Yep, Brent Moore.
Another guy we've never had on the podcast. We've talked to him about him a lot because I had my store about the same time he had his. So we were always swapping comics and notes and whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to bug him a little more.
The crazy thing, a crazy story about Brent. You know, I love the guy. He's a sweet guy. But he crushed my dreams.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. What happened? Story time.
So me and my buddies, we were saving up, cutting lawns and everything. We're like, we want to start our own comic book company. You know, we're feeling all inspired and pumped from, you know, Image Comics in the 90s, you know, Todd McFarlane and the rest of the crew. Sorry, guys, no disrespect. But Todd and those guys, you know, saying, hey, you can make your own dreams happen. So me and my buddies, we literally were like, we're going to illustrate, write and illustrate, publish and produce and distribute all ourselves. We're going to be this like one stop shop. And so we started shopping around to different comic shops, which Brent Moore's was the first place we went, Comic Archives in Apple Valley. I had business cards and everything. I got to get you guys a copy of the business card. I still have some of those. And I go in there and I'm like, yep. We're going to start a comic company, or we started a comic company. We were just wondering, you know, would you carry our books here? And he was like, sure, but you can't use that name. I said, what do you mean? He was like, Epic Comics is owned by Marvel. He goes, that's what they beta test titles under. And yeah, we left and we were like, you know how hard we had to work to get money for those business cards? You know how many lawns we cut? And sit there and doing it. Because back then, you know, it wasn't the digital age. We had to, you know, illustrate this and put it on the line, the key line thing, and bring it into whatever office shop. And then they had to send it out to be produced. So they're like, are you sure this is what you want it printed? We're like, yep. They're like, okay, are you ready to pay this money? We're like, yes. It's me and my buddies. We put all that money on there thinking, yep, we're you know, we got business cards, we're official, we're off to the races. And nope, we're out of business as soon as we started. Oh.
Now, do you carry a grudge in that you no longer you refuse to carry the Epic collections from Marvel?
Those Epic collections sucked. No,
because they use the same DC used the same logo they had for Epic, the comic line, and the magazine.
Yep. No, I...
Ready for a weird little twist of fate on that?
Yeah.
The magazine that became Epic was originally called Odyssey. And Stan Lee did, you know, huge promotion in all the Marvel mags for it. And then, like, about 2 months before they went to press, nope, there's already a magazine called Odyssey. You got to change your name.
So it's not just you, Eric. It's everyone.
Not just us. Everybody does this.
Of course, like you said, nowadays you can internet search and find out if anybody's got something before you get that far along. Did you ever publish a comic, or did it just stop there?
I did publish a comic later in my life, actually, while being comic shop owner of Mind's Eye. I did
publish
a comic.
And Joe, you've talked about it on the show.
Oh, yes. Go ahead. Throw the name out.
Lake of Tears.
Sounds sad.
The tears that I cried when I found out Epic Comics was taking... I'm just kidding. Not completely unrelated. Completely unrelated. No, Lake of Tears. It's an awesome story illustrated by Cedric Gosby. The group is out... or Kigali Arts. Kugali Arts is out of Ghana. Yeah, interesting story. Somebody saw me and hearing my aspirations about being a publisher and being involved in the industry, and they owned the rights to it. We got talking about, you know, some of the education sector stuff that I'm involved in for advocating for literacy and whatnot. And I mentioned to him when he showed me the original, I guess it won some awards. It did win some awards, and which warranted to be printed, which it wasn't even a comic book, the format it was printed in. And I told him, I said, you know, the guys that worked on this, they deserve to actually have a physical comic book in their hand because they're comic book fans. I said, I would love for this to be my flagship title domestically. 2 years later, he came back, you know, because this was all during COVID when that conversation started. Yeah, 2 years later, he came back. We revisited the conversation. We got all the licensing and all that kind of stuff done. And I published it up under Thicket and Thorn, which is a company, the next company imprint that I had. But stay tuned on the publishing front. Mind's Eye Comics has a couple more exclusives getting ready to come out.
Okay, before we jump on that.
Okay.
What attracted you to buy the original Mind's Eye comic?
So I am an original Mind's Eye Comics customer. A lot of people know the spot that was in Eagan in the Thomas Lake Mall.
Did you go there after Brent shut his store?
Yes. Okay. 1998. Shopping with Sir Andrew Trough. And so shop there in 98. Andrew's involved in, other things in the Twin Cities in the theater, like the performing arts industry. 20 years later, he was like, yeah, I'm looking to retire from the comic biz. That's literally the story. He says, you know, because he's a director and producer behind the scenes. And he expressed that he wanted to get back on stage, you know, just do something different in life after about 20 years of running the shop. He was going to close it. He wasn't even going to sell it. He was just like, yep, that's a good bookend, good chapter. Let me close it. And I asked him, I said, would you consider, you know, selling it? And he's like, nope.
There's the end of the story. Nope, yeah, not selling it.
Not selling it. But then he grins at me and he says, well, Eric, if you're asking for yourself, he goes, I would consider it for you. He says, I believe your heart's in the right spot. He says, I bet you probably have no desire to change the name of the shop. I said, no, absolutely not. I was like, the shop is one of my favorite shops in the Twin Cities, and I would love to keep it around for future generations and add to it. And so that's how the conversation started. And then I presented to him, you know, once we got into our discussions, what I wanted to do, which was to make it future forward, like give us an online presence, give us an online retail, online e-commerce presence, get us more active in the comics community, you know, comic conventions and doing trade shows and being involved, and then also being more involved actually in the community of education. So Mind's Eye is a very strong education and library partner, in Dakota County. And then I personally go out to some other areas throughout the Twin Cities when I have an opportunity to speak and talk comics. Oh, you guys want to hear something cool on that education thing?
Sure.
School District 191 for their high school at Burnsville, they now have a course teaching graphic novels because of Mind's Eye Comics.
That is so great.
Yep, it is coming up.
So the question I have, and this is more behind the baseballs because I owned a comic store. I bought a comic store just like you said. It was kind of the same thing. The owners were looking to sell. How did you do it? Case in point, I cashed in like a profit sharing thing I had at Sears because I'd worked there for 10 years prior to moving in the comic store. I had a partner, so he paid half. I paid half. We each tossed in like $5,000 worth of merchandise because we've been doing Comic-Cons up until then.
I had nothing. I had to get financed.
And you actually got financed?
Yes.
It's, again, what year was this?
This was 2018.
Okay, because I know when Pat and I looked at it and we did it in 1992, yep. The thought of getting financing for a business like that was zero. The best we had was, this is how different things were. If you wanted to take Visa, MasterCard, you had to have your business working for a year before the banks would even consider thinking of letting you apply for it. Pat and I got around that by, he worked at U.S. banks, so he kind of knew someone who got us through. So we were able to take credit cards right away, and then American Express came, Discovery came, whatever. Nowadays, just get yourself a smart cash register, and you can take credit cards, and they'll do it for you. They do the processing and everything.
Yeah, and they take all your money while doing
it. No, they did it back then, too. That's why I love this meme going around the Facebook, like, oh, pay cash, pay cash. Yeah, that's a nice idea, but the banks will charge you a percentage of your deposit based on your cash. Now they charge you for change. So again, it's all costs of doing business.
And I should clarify, it's not like it was all 100% financing, because the thing is, when people hear comic books, you can have a great conversation, but the minute you hang up the phone or the minute you leave the office, nobody's calling you back, right? So it was, when I say financing, it's like I learned really quickly that I couldn't say I'm getting this for a comic shop.
Oh, yeah.
I should have said I raised money through a family friend network and then also took out some loans and then pulled dollars together from different sources to be able to get the ball rolling. And yeah, it's just, it's not without its challenges. I don't want to be doom and gloom on the comic biz, because if we don't do it, who will? You know, we got to do it. People love
That's actually a second question, too.
Yeah.
How did you get set up with the distributors? Because case in point, when I started, Cap City was it. You just went down and talked to Mark at Cap City over in the Midway area of St. Paul.
Right.
He knew us. He knew Brian, Dan. He knew that store was ready. I don't even remember what we did to get an account. And then when the 90s went on and, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum, you know, the exclusivity wars, Cap collapsed, Diamond Heroes World popped up, collapsed, Diamond kind of saved everything. How, when you first started, okay, you've got Mind's Eye.
Right.
Diamond was it at the moment. How did they react to you as a new business?
You want to know what I would say is the consensus from year to year, or just over the years, right? Is that working with distributors, or I'm going to zero in on Diamond. You know, I'm just going to zero in on Diamond. Working with Diamond, there seems to be a consensus that it's not easy. It's difficult to deal with them, right? I didn't realize that one of the best things I could have done was taking over a comic shop, right? So when I took over Mind's Eye, it was already established that there was customer shopping there, right? Otherwise, it's very difficult to get a new account established with them. But that's
yeah, because they're also like, you took over the old Mind's Eye because you didn't want to lose those books coming in. So it was kind of like, yeah, go ahead. You can start a new account as long as you take care of the old account.
But that's where they screwed me. This is where they take care of a new business owner behind the scenes. So what they do is they say, well, we're not going to let you purchase through the previous account, but we'll keep it open so you don't miss out on any of the books. Because you taking over, we still want our money because the previous owner has obligated that business to these books, right? And I don't know how their system works. So then they're like, okay, you need to establish a new account and start ordering for yours. And so it would transition from the old account to your account. So guess what? We hit this period where they're sending me the same books through two accounts to one store. And they know they're doing it. And I'm trying to tell them like, hey, can you like stop that or what? They're like, well, no, because contractually, the previous owner obligated the store to these books. So we want our money because he ordered it.
And see, they didn't do that with us. I mean, but we also were very cognizant of, okay, what do they still have? Again, late books. Oh, my God. If a book was 90 days late, it was returnable. And this was before the Image boom. Image wasn't even – I mean, Image – might have sold at the time, Youngblood, maybe Spawn, whatever. They were just starting. The whole Image, oh my God, their books are so late, was in the future. Definitely. So, but we look back and our rep was, and again, this was Cap City, not Diamond, said, well, what does he have ordered that we don't have ordered? And it was like, okay, well, you're going to start with books November. And that's for November, January books.
Yeah.
And so we were able to get a list of things that we knew we didn't need. More importantly, when Brian and Dan moved over to Edina, they were able to order books and ahead of time. The big one, of course, was The Death of Superman. Everybody was going insane for that book.
Yep.
And Brian, I should say Dan, to his credit, ordered like 150 comics from Diamond, but Diamond didn't ship same day. They would ship and it would show up a following week. So for us, it was like, okay, we got like 500 copies of this, sold through them all, and then the following week we'd get a reorder, and then Brian and Dan would grab some for their new shop, which wasn't opening,
yeah,
I think until December.
And you want to know what this means too. All those copies that you sold are out there. And you know where you need to tell your audience to go to get those signed by the guy that did that book?
Where's that?
Mind's Eye Comics, Saturday, April 13th, 11 to 2. The guy that killed Superman will be here to sign your book.
Make it worth. He's probably tired of telling the story behind it, too.
Yeah.
I think in the Twin Cities, there are fewer books unsigned then signed of Death of Superman, because Dan Jurgens has been, you know, signing those books here for 30 years.
Yeah. It's kind of the old biblical thing, you know, the prophet isn't herald in his own town. People don't realize what a massive talent Dan Jurgens is, and a genuinely nice guy. And
yes,
you know, he would be, oh, he's coming to another con. Oh, Dan's there again. But anywhere else, it would be like, Dan's coming. Oh, my God. Rip open that big Superman.
Now, I have a few questions about the whole switching from the original owners to you. First off, you said that it was hard to get a loan. Would it have been easier if you told the bank that you were opening a brothel rather than a comic shop?
Absolutely. Even easier if I told them I was buying a truck.
There you go. Have bought a comic store. And my understanding is that you have a full-time job as well.
Yes.
So as someone else who has more than one job, how did you keep from just completely burning out on both jobs?
Well, the thing is, I think I was completely burning out. My staff at the store was becoming concerned for my health at certain moments. Yeah, no, it wasn't a good, it's not a good situation. It's not ideal. I don't advise anybody doing that.
What prompted the move from the original Mind's Eye to Egan?
You mean from Egan to Burnsville?
Oh, yeah, yeah, roundabout.
And actually, I don't know if some listeners may not know that that space in Burnsville was technically the third Mind's Eye location. The original location was a very small space that was smaller than the space that I had in Burnsville. And then once he got moving and grooving, was doing well, he moved to the larger space that everyone mostly remembers. And then I moved it to Burnsville. So, but to answer the question, the reason I moved it to Burnsville, one, because I knew that I was going to move it to Burnsville because I'm a Burnsville resident. And two, from a strategic standpoint, when you look at the map of the Twin Cities, that is a spot that has never had a comic shop. And it is in a central location where it doesn't step on any of the other boundaries of other comic shops. Because we got a comic shop in Egan, we got a comic shop in Apple Valley, we got a comic shop in Burnsville, we got a comic shop in Bloomington, we got a comic shop in Minneapolis, and we got a comic shop further east, a couple of comic shops going further east, out into St. Paul and Cottage Grove and Hastings.
Now, for your business model, you're talking new comics, because you got right across the street, Antique Minnesota, which itself is almost a miniature comic store. There are so many guys there selling comics. It's crazy.
Yeah. So our thing is new comics, but also we offer a lot of the things like trade paperbacks and the hardcovers that some of the other comic shops don't typically want to make that investment just because they'll sit on the shelf. We cater to an audience that's, you know, people that are looking to build that library that they want to showcase. And then also it's just not just new comics, but there's like a new generation of readers. We have this whole new audience that are trade paperback readers. They want to read it on the bus. They want to, you know, when they're in transit or the light rail, or whatever, when they're going to and from college or to and from work. They're not necessarily like me, my generation, where I want the single issues from a collectible standpoint. Just like my trading cards, my sports cards or gaming cards or whatever. I love to trade and swap and search and treasure hunt and all that kind of stuff. They don't necessarily care for it. Like my son is totally into trade paperbacks. He's just like, give me the content so I can just churn through this. And he's not really looking at it from the collectible lens that I look at things.
Yeah, my kids are the same way because they are more than willing to read my graphic novels.
Yes.
And they'll read individual comic issues too, but I think that group is more in time the way we would look at paperback books growing up. It's like, I'll buy it when I'm ready to read it. It's not like, oh my God, it came out this week. Even as we talk today, tomorrow's new comic book day. I got to go get the new comics.
Yes.
Not that big a deal with graphic novels.
Yeah, but
now
they'll
the question.
They'll get into it eventually. That's my opinion. Yeah.
Now, the question is, and Corey and I talked about it a lot because we always talk about the local shop. So for a while there was a whole thing that happened where you stopped carrying new books and then weren't going on and you closed and now you're reopening.
Yeah, a lot of people are like,
what happened during that? Because, you know, rumors, anytime something changes, people go nuts. You know, it's like, oh, my God, he's going out of business. He's going bankrupt. Ah!
No, I was just didn't. I was just sitting, you know, behind the counter, you know, adjusting the affinity stones in my gauntlet. And I said, you know what? No more new comics for any of you. Let's see how that works. I'm just kidding. That is not what I did at all. That is not what I thought. So
new comics. No one wants them anymore.
I can only read Tor from Gold Key so many times.
You can only buy what I sell you. So, no, honestly, what took place was my mind's always on cloud nine, and I had this super ambitious project underway. It was going to be a two-story store space with an atrium, elevator, stairs in a very premium area in Burnsville, and I was watching the dollars continue to go up and up as material cost kept growing. and I was being priced out of the project. And I just was having a difficult time trying to raise funds to get people behind it because I didn't have the revenue to justify the project at a certain point. I'm like, you know, the revenue will be there, but, you know, it's difficult to get people to believe in your dreams, which my mother, as wise as she always has been, had been, you know, rest in peace, Mom. She's passed. But she said to me, I was like, why can't I just get people? Why can't they just understand and see what's happening? And I said, I can go and buy a brand new truck and they'll like sign off on like a $70,000, $100,000 truck, right, for a loan. I said, but they won't, you know, up the dollars or whatever for the business. And she says, well, because they can see the truck. They can't see your dream. Only you can see that.
They don't get collectibles. They, you know, Pat and I, when we did it, because, again, we looked at funding, but we couldn't get it because – you know, it's like, well, geez, we got like $50,000 in comics here. And they look at it like, we don't get it. If we don't get it, you don't get it. A truck, they can seize. You know, if they seize $50,000 in back issue comics, they're going to go, okay, let's sell it. And then they'll go around and these guys will laugh at them and say, ah, no, they're not worth $50,000.
Right. And so, but anyway, I ended up getting, having to, redirect dollars trying to attain or keep on track an ambitious dream for this space. And unfortunately, which got me into not the greatest situation with Diamond, but we're working things out. We're working things out.
Yeah, I've told stories in the past. Diamond, at least when I worked with them, and again, I had my shop when 9/11 hit, they were really good with working with me. Even when I closed my second store, Crazy Comics, you know, and I basically, I'm closing as of this date. And then they send you, okay, you owe us 10% of what you didn't order, which is fine. Yeah, sadly, that included the JLA Avengers signed book, which, thank goodness, Nick Post, God rest his soul, was able to find for me eventually. So I did get it, even though I was kind of Diamond like, you know, I'll take this stuff if you want, because I was still doing Comic Cons and that. But they're like, I think they just want to settle it, and 10% is a good business standard for them. Now, I do have
I should point out. Go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry, Joe.
No, you go ahead. Mine was a change.
All I was gonna say. No, on the Diamond thing. I didn't want to change off of Diamond. I did want to point out that, like, when I point out the difficult or the challenges that I was having at the time in 2018, when I took over the shop, Diamond was actually undergoing infrastructure changes. They had a lot of turnover, new account reps, new people. So you had mentioned, you know, the care that you received where they were really going through your account to make sure you weren't paying, you know, for stuff that you don't need. I had a new school of people that really didn't know. They were leaning on me to tell them what they needed to do. So we were both, what was the old term? Like the blind leading the blind. I don't know if that's politically correct anymore, but whatever. It was like a new camp there that didn't really understand their system. And I was new to this whole system from a retail standpoint. You know, you got a guy that came in the shop like, oh, I know comics.
We had a guy that was part of Cap City's thing, is they would have somebody come around once every so often, 2-3 months. And their goal was to, you know, well, here's the things we think you should buy. And Nick would always tell me, yeah, they love you. Why? Well, because you sit the guy down, you give him a bottle of that bastard root beer, and you run through the shop and check off his list. Yeah, give me this. That's another question. With the way the distributor wars currently have kind of spread out, and I couldn't even remember what the hell happened because it's just so crazy. You know, these guys are exclusive. You got to go with Penguin. You got to go here.
Yeah.
Did you miss that when the store was closed, or did you have to deal with that, or do you have to deal with that going forward?
It is ongoing. The distributor wars are ongoing. And the only way the battle's going to be won is once Penguin Random House absorbs them all. seriously.
I can see that. Because that was something, too, in talking with you and some of the other retailers. Diamond's really fallen from grace. I mean, people, I'm in my brain said Diamond single-handedly saved the comic market in the 90s because Capital went under and Marvel screwed themselves and they kind of absorbed everybody and they made sure all the bills were paid. And again, granted, it was annoying to, yeah, yo, a Heroes World invoice we just discovered from about 2 years ago. And I'm also kind of like, you know, I think after a year, you have to take it as bad debt. But it usually it was like 10 bucks or something stupid. You know, when you're getting like $10,000 wholesale a week, it's like not a big deal, but annoying nonetheless.
And what really sucks about the books that I had. So I had a lot of loyal customers that were waiting, or subscribers that were waiting for certain books. And it wasn't a lie. You know, some people thought Eric's not really ordering these books. I legitimately was ordering every title but Diamond was holding it for me. Right. And they wouldn't release it. I'm like, could you just release it to kind of keep the revenue going? You know, and they just said, nope, we're not going to release it. We'll hold it on the docks. And so that problem was continuing to grow. Right. And so eventually what happened after so much time went by and the construction project collapsed, right? I didn't have the event space and the opportunity to generate the revenue to pull in all of those books that I had being held. So you know what Diamond did?
I almost hate to ask.
They said, we're going to charge you a percentage of all these books, and we're going to sell them to other people at a liquidated cost.
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so that's the ugly side of business, because a lot of people thought that I wasn't ordering them. And it's like my customers, my fans of the shop, they're my first priority. And if I tell them that I'm ordering something for them, I'm ordering, I'm committing, you know, myself financially to that. Unfortunately, when I get screwed over, or not a different language, or you know, I'm not going to phrase
that
differently.
That's okay. We're an explicit podcast.
Yeah. When I get screwed over, then unfortunately, my customer also feels the impact of that. You know, because there's people that are like, hey, are you going to get the books? You know.
Now, are your customers elsewhere, or are they waiting for you to come back?
They are waiting for me to come
back. They're not waiting for the books, obviously, but.
Yeah. They're waiting for me to come back. There's a lot of people that love the shop and they're shopping elsewhere, right? I mean, they are shopping elsewhere. I encourage them to spend their money at other comic shops because it's important that we support all local comic shops if we can, you know.
And Nick also had a theory that when a comic shop folded, those people, he said about 50% of them would disappear. Because that was a weird phenomenon in the 90s where anybody who had 20 bucks would pop up into a comic store. And a lot of my customers would try their shops. They ended up closing a couple years later. But none of those customers that went to those shops ever came back to me. They would just kind of drift away. So when I had Crazy Comics, which my short attempt to, you know, after my store went under, I call it my store because it was, but it bounced up. And it was interesting because, and I don't know if I shared that story with you ever, Eric, when I sent in my order, I had 50 people come from the old Hot Comics that had gone under. And I think it changed. Corey, what did it change to? Christie's Comics?
Yes.
And then Polar Comics. And so 50 people came back to me. So I placed my order. And again, I'm thinking, okay, it's only like $1,200 wholesale. You know, and again, I'm bragging because I was doing like 10 grand a week in wholesale at the big store. Diamond called me, and again, this was 2004. Are you sure about this order? And I'm like, yeah, I ordered very tight, like onesie twosies for the shelf, if that. And Corey probably remembers of me going, yeah, unlike the big store where I can order everything, if I can't sell a Cerebus, I'll sell it to the two people who want it, and I'm not going to put it on the shelf. But Diamond was like, are you sure this order's right? It's awfully big. And I'm like, oh my God, this industry's doomed. If $1,000 wholesale is a month is too much.
Wow. Yeah.
And then on the other end, when they close, while we talked about, they just come at you and they go, yeah, we'll give you a percentage, whatever. So, but they were really cool about it. And I don't even remember many hoops jumping through when I reopened my shop because they knew me, and I think I settled with them on good terms. Now, that said, who do you have to deal with now for new comics or even just books?
I'm still dealing with Penguin Random House and Diamond. Lunar, unfortunately, my conversations with them are still underway. But I have a lot of allies here in the Twin Cities, other comic shop owners, and they're always willing to help me out in a pinch so I can make sure we get what we need on the shelf for new releases.
Now, I have a question, and I don't want to say this incorrectly, lest the throngs of your fans come with their mighty wrath and smite me. Now, some of the press you got when you opened your shop was, it astounded me because I never realized that you were the only minority-owned comic book shop in Minnesota.
Correct.
And that,
I did not know that either. Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Did that help? Did that hinder? How did that work for you?
It was an interesting situation because it didn't occur to me. It was like somebody told this to me. It was a black comic fan that worked in the business development industry. And we had a conversation. He found out more about me, and he found out like the way I curate books for the store, meaning that I carry a lot of nonfiction, I carry a lot of history, which encompasses Black history as well, and just focus on a lot of titles that typically people wouldn't buy. But I just thought it was the coolest shit ever, the coolest stuff ever, right?
We're good.
Yeah, and
you can swear, God damn it.
All right. I just thought it is the coolest thing ever. It's like, dude, there's a freaking graphic novel about, Muhammad Ali or Nelson Mandela. Like, this is because this is how I communicate. And I just thought, what a cool thing to introduce somebody to this information this way. And so this business development guy, he finds out about me. He's like, dude, I think you're like the only, he's like, I'm a comic book head. I think you are the only black owned comic shop. Now here's the thing. We have other black owned book stores and book retailers here. It was just specific to the comic industry. That combined with what I'm curating, he reached into his business network. Now mind you, I am unaware any of this is happening and any of these conversations are taking place. And he pitches the story like, dude, this guy, black owned comic shop, promoting black history in a comic shop, let alone like no matter what race he is, nobody's promoting this information and is an education partner advocating for literacy. Right. He's like, I think there's a story here. So he pitched it to Adrian Broaddus of Care 11 at the time, which she's no longer there. And I get a phone call. I'm at work. I get a phone call. And she's like, hello, this is Adrian Broaddus from Care 11. And I remember my boss, his desk is like right next to me, to my left, low cube walls. So he sees me take a phone call and like not caring because I hear it's the news on the phone. And he's like, or Adrian says, hey, would you be interested in doing a story? We'd like to cover you in the month of February for Black History Month for what you do and how you curate books and how you advocate for Black history and how you advocate for literacy. And I was like, sure. I said, what are you thinking? Like 2 weeks out? Like, what's the schedule? She was like, have you ever been in the media before? And I'm like, well, no. She was like, oh, okay. Well, this is how it works, Eric. I pitch a story to the producer. And when the producer gives me a green light, we have to go. So like, I need you right now. And I'm like, oh, like now? Like now? Like right now?
You mean I gotta put on pants?
Yeah. And I said, well, can I at least get like a half an hour? I'm like, I'm at work. I'll head over to the store. She was like, let me see. She's 100% legit. Like, well, let me see. I got to check with the producer because they basically, it's a budget. They have to say you can have access to this equipment and the vans and whatever. And so she puts me on hold and comes back and she says, yeah, I can give you 30 minutes exactly. She goes, can you be at the store? And I'm like, I'll be there. I told my boss I'm leaving. He's, you know, people are like, geez, Eric doesn't even ask can I leave work. I'm like, screw you, dude. I'm about to be on the news. Like,
I'm on air, man.
And so I left. I left work, which my boss is a great he's awesome. He was my friend. And then he became the boss in the department. Shout out to Brad Ferg. Appreciate you, man. But so I head to the shop and we literally shoot the story on the spot. And at the time, you know, I'm a small business, struggling business. I need money. I need my story out there. I need people to know I'm there. I'm literally pouring out my soul in this interview. Right. I'm like, what? She just basically just tells me to tell her my story. Right. Start pouring everything out. And at one point she has this look in her eyes and I like stop and I say, well, is everything okay? Did I say too much or am I going the wrong direction or whatever? She was like, no, it's just interesting. She goes, you've never done this before, have you? I said, no. And she just grins and then says, you know, it's great. And I'm like, what? She was like, you're genuine, you know, my sincerity, basically. Just because, I don't watch a lot of the news, but apparently what I've learned is there are a lot of people that are news like hogs or like they want that horse, attention. They want that attention. And all I wanted to do was to get my story out there to say, hey, I exist. This place is freaking cool. Please come and shop with us. You know, I want to stay open. And I'm relevant for this reason. And so, and this is my story. I want you guys to see, you know, the man behind what Mind's Eye Comics is today. And man, dude, I swear, like, it was like clockwork. When that news article hit, my phones were ringing. Like, people were coming through the door. I thought, wow, it's happened, you know. We're off to the races. And then COVID was like, sit your ass down.
Sit your ass down.
Well, right. I'm going to be asking some tough journalist questions.
Okay.
Okay.
So, first off.
But not that question. That's too tough. I jumped the gun. I'm sorry, Eric. I was all ready to help you out. You're on your own.
One of the things that we talk about is in this current market with comic, you know, monthly comic sales have been on a downward path for 70 years. Mm-hmm. And when we talk how to run a shop now, one of the things that we talk about that I've learned through reading all the industry stuff is diversity of product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I went into Mind's Eye, new comics, trade paperbacks, not much in the way of back issues, and not much in the way of other things. You had one wall that had some toys and games and such, and some video games. But really, you were at the mercy of Marvel and DC.
Yes.
I imagine they were 75 to 80% of your sales.
Yes.
What are you doing in the new shop to make it so if Marvel and DC have a bad quarter, they chalk it up to, you know, bad. Okay, we didn't do that good. If they have a bad quarter for you, it could spell the end. Mm-hmm. Joe's Second Shop. Do you remember Civil War?
It was Civil War.
Yeah. And Civil War had a delay, which meant that Marvel did all the books that were tying into it didn't come out. That killed his store. Right there. Mm-hmm. Boom. What are you going to do in the new store so that you're not at the mercy of Marvel and DC?
I'm going to implement my plan that I never was able to do in that tiny space. So one, I was not just at the mercy of Marvel and DC because my core audience, it was very difficult to get them to try anything new. That's what they wanted. You know, I don't blame them. You know, you stick to what you know, what you enjoy. And maybe on a sale, dabble into other things. The space of the shop made it very difficult for me to try to even toy around with other ideas of how to bring in new products or build new audiences. The space that I have now, oh man, this is a game changer, right? So we can have that core audience that's looking Marvel in DC, but now we're going to be offering coffee, some light refreshments and pastries and whatnot. We're going to have tables and seating so we can have people come in if they want to hang out, do some tabletop gaming. We're opening up more into some of our other media, like legacy video game equipment and games. More, the store is going to become a lot more just a pop culture centric with just comic book focus. So we'll have, you know, some CDs, some albums, some movies, right? Not a ton of it, but that'll be there. We're going to have some apparel. We have some local talent that is making some amazing custom pop culture apparel, like jean jackets with cool just geek badges and stuff all over it, or things from comic books and the stuff that we love. Really cool stuff. We're going to be carrying stuff like that. Getting heavier into the trading cards. So Magic the Gathering, in which I'm a Yu-Gi-Oh! I played Magic when it first came out, but I'm also a Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan. And I want to see if I can get us registered as a tournament place for Yu-Gi-Oh! To try to help bring it back. And I know right now there's probably a lot of Yu-Gi purists out there that are like, don't bring it back. But you know, it's my game, and I did love it. They changed a lot of formats. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but they changed a lot of things with the format. But you can still play some of the original core decks. It's difficult, but you can still play them against the newer decks. Well, anyway, so just diversifying the product offerings. And I can tell you right now in the Burnsville Center, Burnsville Mall, that's where we're at. You got to come and check us out.
Drop the address if you know it.
Yeah. Burnsville, County Road 42, right off of Nicollet. I don't have the exact number, but yeah,
right off 35W.
Yeah, right off 35W. No.
Yes, 35W.
Yep. So we're here, and I'm going to be the only place in the mall currently serving coffee. I'm setting up a Wi-Fi, so we'll have a guest Wi-Fi network, and just trying to make the place more welcoming to just whether you're college students, you're a business person, and this is kind of your space that you love to be in, right? And I always used to tell my staff, I say, hey guys, you know, because when I would try to introduce like little small amounts in a corner here and there in that small spot that we had in Burnsville, they're like, nobody's gonna buy that, nobody's gonna do this. I'm like, there's got to be something for everybody, you know. It's not our bread and butter, it's not what we got to do, but you know, we're here to make sure people are entertained. I said, here's the thing, you look at Half Price Books, right? They always are busy and they don't even have coffee. So I'm thinking to myself, if I got coffee and I can curate, you know, a little bit more diverse selection, I'm thinking we're off to the races. So
now the next thing, my next hard question, which is one that obviously you've thought about, malls are not exactly hot right now.
Oh, but we are. We are.
Now, I've heard that Burnsville Center is kind of going through a rehab.
Yes.
But I'm going to be blunt with you. About 2 months ago, I watched a video on dead malls.
Right.
Burnsville Center.
Right.
So while it was probably cheaper to get in there than mm-hmm. it would have been, say, 10 years ago, driving foot traffic into a mall seems to be hard. I know that for your opening, you're going to have Dan Jurgens there.
Yes.
But what are you going to do to get people to come to the mall when even Southdale can't get people to walk
so
in there?
In other words, are you going? How do you make it so you're not just a destination store for geeks like Corey and I who would come because you're a comic store versus someone who, like you said, let's go to Half Price or let's go to fill in the blank.
Right. This is how you do it. First and foremost, the Burnsville Center has a freaking skate park in the mall. Skateboarding skate park in the mall. Half pipe, full pipe, like you want to get on your skateboard. There is a legit skate park in the Burnsville Center. Insane. How many malls have that? Zero. Right. And then, yes, when it comes to rehabilitation, the new owners there. Yes, there are new owners. There are a lot of people that thought that the mall was dying and going away. And yes, it was up and down and back and forth. We finally had some new investors come in and buy the mall that actually office out of the mall. So they're here. They get to, they have to hear and face the noise of the city personally. And this team of individuals, they've already ordered up 60,000 square foot of tile to rip that old ass carpet out. They're going to, it's getting all done. They've got a full on cleaning staff going through, keeping the mall upkept now. They've got a security team here now. The mall smells clean when you walk in. Like, and there's more businesses that are coming into the mall. I just say stay tuned to everybody, but they are really working hard to bring people an experience. There is going to be a lot more food venues. They've got a hibachi steakhouse coming in. They've got like upscale fitness centers moving in and a petting zoo. I'm like, you mean a petting zoo with like real animals? Is that safe? But yeah, so they've got whatever that is coming in. But all kinds of, they're trying to really turn it for more entertainment where people can, where families want to come out and just have a good time. You want somewhere to go, something to do. And then for Mind's Eye Comics, personally, now that I've, you know, talked up the Burnsville Center itself a little bit, Mind's Eye Comics, stay tuned for us because on my agenda, we are looking to do monthly events. Every single month, we will have either a guest author, creator, you know, illustrator, or a keynote speaker, somebody in the industry or, you know, that ties into what we love. I'm looking to have a guest or some type of event at least once a month to really drive traffic into the shop.
One suggestion I want to make that I've seen other shops do, but none do it in the Twin Cities.
What is this?
Book club.
Oh, you know it. So I'm glad you said that. I am glad you said that. Here's the thing. Mind's Eye Comics, with our education partnership, School District 191, we have been working with them trying to do comic book clubs and just book clubs in general at the school. And I always had to do everything offsite or try to, you know, manage logistics because we didn't have the space in Burnsville. Whereas now we have the space to bring it on site. And so, yes, that is on my list or my agenda of things that we're going to be doing to promote like monthly ongoing activities.
Now, the only advice I can give you,
yeah,
and again, I could give you tons of advice, and someday we'll sit down and have some coffee, or you can bring us mystery boxes again. You revamp mystery boxes, and Corey and I can gut them again.
Yes.
And again, this may not work with the area. One of the best displays I ever had at Hot Comics, and again, Hot Comics was a strip mall, so it was like a parking lot with a sidewalk. There was some foot traffic, but not a lot. I put one of every media property I could possibly have. And again, this was 1990. So if you said, what's right, best-selling comic? X-Men? Who's that? Now everybody knows who X-Men. Everybody knows Avengers. Everybody knows everybody. But what I put in the window were like, you know, Muppet Babies. I put Kiss. It was probably Revolutionary Comics. I put Buffy. I put anything that had a media presence, just to get people to stop and look. And I had more people come in looking, and I sold more comics off that display. Every so often, Corey and I will do a podcast, and it just so happens I have my previews here. And you look through it, and you think, okay, what's possibly coming up that, well, that's coming? Oh, Godzilla. Okay, let's get Godzilla comics. And again, whether you carry Godzilla toys or not depends on what the heck you feel like spending your diamond money on, you know? Guardians of the Galaxy had a movie. I don't know. What's the next comic book movie coming up?
The next one coming up. Actually, hold that thought. Let me show you something, though. On that note about your display, I love that we're all on the same page. I'm going to turn my camera on. I know you guys just do the podcast voice, but just to show you quickly, turn on my camera here. So here's the front counter, right? And, you know, here's a window into the mall, and here's the entrance, and then here's the other window, right? So, but let me show you what's in my window on that note of what we were talking about. Look at that. It is my showcase where I line up. I don't know.
Oh, beautiful.
Sorry. This cardboard standee's in the way right now. But darn Harbinger. So, but yeah, Valiant Comics. But yeah, that's already there in the window displaying. So you'll be able to, when you're walking through the mall, you'll be able to see things showcased right here. So right there with you. Yep. Man.
That was probably one thing, if I could go back. Eventually, I put showcases against the window, and I had posters in the window. But when I blocked the window, it blocked people's ability to just look in the shop and, you know, create a 3D type image. Because, right. Again, I did, you know, the old shop had an actual 1960-ish style. What would you call it, Corey? Like veranda? It was actually, you know, here's the window. I've got flat space and then the inner wall, so I could climb in there and build a display. The new shop was just windows. So yeah. I had to put things like, and you don't want to necessarily tape too many posters on the window, but that's another question. Do you have, Diamond used to send me tons of posters and things to put in the window and all sorts of fun stuff. Is that even a thing anymore?
It is. They still send. And the crazy thing is, I've still been receiving promos and posters and all that sweet stuff. And so that's part of the fun part of it, you know, getting the promotional stuff. And
you've got your hardcore customers. They're waiting. They're chomping at the bit. I imagine when this here podcast drops, it'll be the 9th and you're opening the 13th. How would you address, you're opening a comic store kind of by my house, but I go to this store. How would you even want them? Again, that's not the right word, but you know what I'm saying. You know, how do you want to attract them to, like, maybe, well, change your mind, come visit me, just not because I'm close, but because I'm fun. Because that's a big thing, too. I mean, there are people that will travel from the northern suburbs out by Maple Grove all the way down into St. Paul because they wanted to go to my store specifically.
I would say that our main draw, and this is even before I was on the scene as the owner, back when Andrew owned it, Andrew always believed in, like, curating the widest selection, like as indie as it gets. Like, if it was a comic out there, he wanted to at least have a copy of it in the store. And there's another shop that was like him. Mike owned, his name is Mike. He owned Big Brain Comics in Minneapolis.
Oh, Big Brain. Oh, yeah. I love Big Brain.
Yeah, that's my other one of my other favorite shops when I was going to school at the Art Institute. I'd be there every day. But he did the same thing. You know, he would have just these weird, obscure titles. And I just loved it, like finding just this stuff that you're not going to find anywhere else. And so Mind's Eye, we've kind of held on to that reputation. Like, if you're looking for an indie book, 9 times out of 10, we have it. You know, we're going to have it here. But to take it a step further into the future, me with my publishing activities, you know, there's a lot of exclusive stuff that we're going to start having as far as fan art and just comic books in general, where we'll drop it first in our store and then it will be distributed out to the other stores.
You can always send us a copy or two and we'll talk right. It up, you know?
Yes.
Or better yet, let us know when it's there and we'll just come buy it. We'd rather support you. We like freebies, yeah. But freebies. We don't want anybody going out of business.
So we have a book. So there's a couple of books that I'm working with some creative teams right now. One title is Apex, which Apex, I get it. It's a common title that people hear. This one is actually the, you know, the A dot P dot E dot X kind of deal, just because it stands for, the characters stand for different things. But it's about a humanoid character that has been augmented and developed for certain, you know, mysterious reasons. But anyway, the writer and the artist were going to be here on the grand open as well, but the artist has to be at another show. So the writer will be here, Paul Hallgren. He will be here. to meet with the public, and we'll have a ash can available for the public to grab and get to chat with him as well. We're going to have cosplayers here. One of the Twin Cities like top DJs is going to be here for at least a couple of hours at the beginning of the event.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I actually know him personally from childhood, and I had to reach out for that friend, or, you know, that friend relationship thing. He's DJ Aquil with Ascend Entertainment. He's DJed for the Minnesota Vikings. He's DJed the Mall of America and the Rotunda. He's like, he's as big as it gets in the Twin Cities when it comes to DJing. I was like, hey, dude, you offered to DJ when I moved to Burnsville, and I said I didn't have the space for your equipment. I'm like, I do now. Will you come and DJ this grand open? He was like, absolutely. He's like, I have a show that day, he said, but I'll be there for at least, you know, the first couple hours, and then I have to go. And so I'm just like, this is just insane. Got Dan Jurgens. I got Aquil from, you know, Ascend Entertainment. I've got some representation for our up and coming, like, your indie exclusives. It's just, and cosplayers are coming out to show up. Man, it's going to be a fun time.
Now, the last question I have, unless you have something, Corey, because I got a hard, hard question.
Okay, this will be the final question. Hard-hitting journalists that we are.
Yeah.
Tough.
How do we know that you're going to be on time versus, like, the Supergirl art you were supposed to make me a couple years ago?
You know,
I withdraw my question.
Oh, my goodness. You want to know something, Dojo? I have that on my drawing desk. I look at it every chance I can. I'm like, you know, I got to get this done.
Yeah, I can see. You're just here. Yeah, I should get this done for Joe. You know what? I think I'll reopen my comic store first. Yeah, priorities. I get it.
Yes.
Well, you know what else should be a priority, Joe?
I just opened this copy of Mission Impossible 2 from Dell from 1967, but it's really beat. Maybe I'll just sell it on eBay.
No, that's not the priority. The priority is these guys, our sponsors. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files. It backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/3ku, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. Now, normally, after we have the sponsors, we have something where we do a retro review.
You mean I read this Mission Impossible 2 for nothing?
Is that what you're going to review?
Oh, God, it was mint. Oh, well.
Now, that's where we review an older comic.
Call it pre-owned, put it on eBay.
So, Eric, have you read an older comic, say 5 years or older, within the last week or so?
No.
Cancel the interview. It's over. Game over.
Then I will jump in with the one I have read, which is actually a paperback book. The Non-Violent Mad. It is a Signet book, actually through the Warner Paperback Library. It was published in 1971. It was the 31st Mad paperback. Oh, I'm sorry. It was published in 1972. And it reprints stuff from Mad Magazine. I want to get the dates here right. From 1966. So what the Mad paperbacks were, if for those of you who were not around when they did this, when Mad was a comic book, Signet picked up the rights to reprint them as books. And they sold really well as paperback books. And they just continued printing them up as paperback books. Some of them went into, I think, what, World Mad, which originally came out in 1962, went through 20 different printings. So they were quite popular, and they just would reprint stuff from Mad Magazine in as a paperback book. The problem with it, now that I'm not as young as I used to be, is, oh my gosh, it's so much smaller. But this one has about 20 articles in it that are representative of what Mad was doing back in 1966, usually 2 to 4 panels a page. But there's one story that I want to point out, and that is Batsman. It is a parody of the Batman TV show. It was done by Mort Drucker, who did the art. Writer was Lou Silverstone. The plot of it is that Robin is sick of Batman getting all the attention, so he has all of these different plans to kill Batman to become the main superhero.
That's the regular story.
Well, currently, you know, they recycle things. Remember, when this came out, DC didn't own Mad yet.
Right. And also, Robin wasn't, you know, there was only one Robin. So, the twist at the end of the story is when Batman gets out of the cage that Robin has imprisoned him in, he says, look, the thing to remember is the industry made a revolutionary discovery. Give the in-group garbage, make the show bad enough, they'll call it camp and stay glued to their sets. Holy Nielsen, you mean the swingers are really the squares? Exactly. So let them laugh, because we laugh too, all the way to the bank. And about your little problems, boy wonderful, remember, I promised you the bluebird of happiness. Now that you're, say, old enough, you can start enjoying the show's fringe benefits. Why do you think all we have these gorgeous women co-stars? Yeah, Batman, I dig. The beautiful thing about it is Mort Drucker's art. They do 2 panels per page. So Mort Drucker is one of those artists who did caricature art. And Mark Evanier tells a story where a bunch of Silver Age artists were standing around talking, and the topic came up of who was the best artist in comics. And this was at a San Diego show. So you had the usual suspects, Will Eisner, and nobody could agree. They were all arguing until somebody said Mort Drucker. And then everybody went silent and said, yeah. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he wins.
He is. The Non-Violent Mad is a really good example of what Mad was publishing in 1966. By this point, Dave Berg's art style had sort of become the much more what we think of as Dave Berg, where it's much more suburban jokes for older people. A lot of the art styles when people came in were a little more individualistic in that they were harsher. But by this point, the sharp edges had been sort of sanded off. When you see the Sergio Aragonés art, you'll say, oh, yeah, that's the Sergio Aragonés that I recognize. There's a lot of Don Martin in this because Don Martin was probably the most popular artist. But I would say that this... probably one of the better collections because it was at the peak of Mad's creative popularity. It was much more popular in the 70s. It sold a lot more issues. But I think in the 60s, they were still sort of pushing at boundaries, breaking barriers, and learning their art style. So Corey says, the Nonviolent Mad, why yes. On buy, borrow, ignore, it's a buy, baby. And now it's time for my favorite part of the show.
Fire drill!
No, not where I take a lot of antihistamines to see how long I can sleep. No, it's freaking and geeking. And we'll start with Eric. Eric, what are you freaking on?
What you freaking on?
What am I freaking on? I am loving all the Ghostbusters, actually. All the Ghostbuster stuff, whether it's in comics
geeky.
Or in the
that's
movies.
That's geeky. That's next.
Freaking is what you're freaking out about.
Yeah. Different idea. Oh, boy.
Different.
Yeah, freaking is what's bugging different. You. What's got you gander up? What's torquing you off? You can't... You know, if I wait till Festivus for Corey to go freaking, that's all he'll do for 4 hours. But what's got you down? What's got you upset? What's got you torqued off?
Well,
did you read, watch, or whatever that you didn't like?
I can tell you the one thing is people getting so upset if something meanders away from the core story when you go watch the movie. Like Godzilla versus Kong, and then people get hypercritical. It's like I just came to see two giant monsters battle. I'm rooting for Godzilla, like, you know. And so, but anyway, I don't know. That's the one thing that kind of gets me. And then the other thing. Oh, actually, I do want to jump into the whole art thing. Comic books. How many fans miss the original hand-drawn titles on comic books? So I work in the arts industry, and when you look at all the comics that come out today, that's a bunch of stuff that's produced digitally. The titles, like, you know, where it says Shazam or Batman or whatever the title is. Those titles are all done digitally, and it doesn't have that same character and life that you would get on a hand-drawn, laid out and designed title. And I get it. You don't have to have it for everything. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they try to do a good job of just reproducing the original hand-drawn logo or title block and putting it on every issue, which I respect that. But yeah, that's one thing that's weird. Who is it? The artist, Art Germ. I remember when Art Germ first hit the scene, I was like, oh, this is so beautiful. This is amazing. I've never seen anything like this. And then it got old really, really fast. You know, no disrespect. I love Art Germ stuff. Still beautiful. But it's guys like, what's his name? Pat Gleason. I love that he still hand draws. You know, Dan Jurgens. I love that he still pencils and hand draws things. Versus, you know, it being so overly digital in the comics.
Joe, what are you freaking on?
Well, I don't know for certain. And again, I'll tell this to Corey because this will be more his problem. Because, you know, Corey has a thing where he's got to work every single freaking day of the week. Oh, my God, I got 5 minutes off. I'm a failure.
Oh, wait till WrestleMania. I counted up for WrestleMania week this week. I am covering 15 wrestling shows.
Yes.
Slacker.
Dude, I love that you are still hyping wrestling, man. I finally can display my LJN WWF wrestling superstar figures in the shop.
Oh,
cool. Sorry to interject here, but it was a really cool story how I got them.
Let's hear it. Story time.
So, story time.
Hold on. Why don't we save that for geeking?
Ah, yes.
Because it's up your geeking on.
Yes. I will save it.
All right. So, Corey, it looks like my work schedule will be, I'll be off Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays. So, it doesn't start until... The 23rd, or I'm looking at the week. Oh, I guess the 19th. Yeah.
Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays?
I work 10-hour days at the airport,
So they give me 3 days off. I could work 8-hour days and leave at 8 p.m. every day, which is tempting during the summertime. But with everything I do on the side, the eBay, and try to visit all the comic stores and spend as much money as I can, because when I retire in 2 years, 9 months, how many days in April? 28 days as of this podcast being recorded. Let's see, 3 hours and 28 minutes. Not that I'm counting. I won't do seconds. That'd be ridiculous. I just realized, and that'll probably be a podcast for another day. Hey, now I can't just buy things like crazy. You know, it's like, oh, that looks good. I'll buy it. You've been hearing noises in the background. I'm going through collections of books like, have I read this? No, I haven't. Am I going to read it? I've been sitting on it for 7 years. Nah, probably not. But some
you don't
of us
need
like,
to read it.
Like I was talking about that Mission Impossible Go Adele comic. I mean, I'm not going to find another one, even if I, you know, I just bought this for a buck as a beat up copy. And that's a geeking or freaking I've talked about before. I mean, yeah, you're a young kid, Eric. You can still hang with them. You know, Corey and I are getting to be old people, you know. I realize I'm not going to have near enough time to watch, read, listen to all the media I have gathered.
Yeah, but part of comic collecting is also saying that you got it, that you bought it, that you found it.
I've actually gotten past that. And part of the problem I've had is people are like, oh, you've been collecting since 1977. Yeah, you must have some good stuff. No, because I started selling comics in 1984. Matter of fact, I mention it every so often when the MCBA does their fall con, my original partner, Pat Gruber, and I are going to set up, because it'll be 40 years since we did our first comic show. And again, in 84, I was 19, you know, and I'm 59 now. I started collecting in 77. Anybody does the math, I'm going to reach through the interwebs and strangle you. But it's fun. It's bittersweet. But it's also the last couple shows I've done. It's even converting everything to short boxes. It's hard. It's hard to stand on those floors. It's hard to. The other beefing I've had is that, and again, this is old news, so sorry for you podcasters out there, but geez, the collections that are popping up these days are amazing. The books that people are selling on eBay, or I should say on Facebook, yeah, Minnesota Comic Exchange, who are really great guys in terms of, you know, well, Corey, they let Corey drop the podcast. They've been promoting you as well. Just the stuff that's popping up. And of course, they're at the collector prices they should be. I mean, yeah, not the 8.5 graded Action Comics number one, I think sold for $4.2 million. A billion. But the collections that are popping up are just old guys like me, just, yeah, my kids don't want this stuff. Let's get rid of it. And when I had my comic store, when I started selling comics, and definitely when I had my comic store, I started looking at comics more as a commodity rather than a collector. Hey, yeah, I've got Solar 10, $20 book, sell it for 20 bucks, you know? So I don't have as much in my collection as you would think, because I'm more a reader. I do love going to comic stores and digging through stuff, especially cheap bins, and just finding stuff like, okay, I'll give you a quick rundown. Okay, here's a book called The Brownies. It's from Dell Comics, 1951. I'm not going to say this right. Cheyenne? It's one of those Westerns shows.
Ooh.
Got some Gene Autry comics. Here's some Flash Gordon, a little bit newer ones. There's The Invaders, the old TV show. Little Dot in Dotland. Looney Tunes. Zane Grey, Stories of the West. And that's just the little pile I'm playing with here. I love digging up low-grade cheese and looking at it. Don't know when I'll read it, but that's also part of what we do here at the podcast. We like to talk about that. The final thing I'm freaking on. I had a flat tire today. What sucks is
in the snow.
Well, that didn't even bother me because the snow is melting, and I'm one of those weird freaks who likes posting, hey, it's going to snow, winter storm warning, come bring it. Everybody's like, no. I actually, somebody contacted me, and they had some comics they didn't know what to do with, and I'm like, oh, ching-ching, not really. What it was is she just wanted them out of the house because they were like her ex's comics and whatever. So I went over to pick them up. And then on the way home, you know, you hear pum, 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 pum. Then you change pavement. Oh, that went away. Must be weird pavement. I got to a place. I had to stop, pick up some pet food for my rabbit. And then, holy shit, the back tire's flat. It's flat on the bottom. So I think I can make it to Holiday, which is like 4 blocks away. I tried to fix a flat. The first one didn't go into the tire. It went all over my hands. Fortunately, the lady at Holiday exchanged it for another one, STP brand, which I think only like it's supposed to when you use a fix-a-flat on a tire, you're supposed to keep doing it until the rim raises. The rim never raised. I don't know if this crap actually went into the tire. So finally, I chucked 75 cents, waddled the car over, and filled it up with air. And I think between whatever fix-a-flats in it and the air, it fixed it enough to keep it from getting flat. But when I got home, I was talking with a buddy of mine, Eric, and he says, does it have the ring of doom on it? I said, what are you talking about? Look on the tire, and if you see a ring around it, not against the rim of the tire, but definitely not by the edge of the tire. If there's a ring around it, that means your tire's dead. It's been chewed up enough inside. It's not, you got to go get it replaced. Wow. So after I talk with them, get out there. Yep. I got the ring of death. So tire's still good. So after this here podcast, I'm going to go drive it down to my place. And at least I could drop it off overnight. But it's new comic book day tomorrow. I don't know how I'm going to get my comic books. I got to get there first and get what I want. I got a lot of issues.
Corey. What do you got? I got the list in front of me. I didn't know we were going to talk about new comics.
Let it be a surprise.
Let it be a surprise.
I know. I hit the
never looks at what's coming out.
I never look at what's coming out. I look at previews. That's enough. I live in two worlds. What's happening 2 months from now? What's happening today? And of course, I've got my Rin Tin Tin comic from. Oh God, that's a nice picture of him. Let's see, what's this bad boy from? Oh, 1953. Corey, I'm gonna read this while you tell me. What are you freaking on?
First off, Scott Dumbier, he was an original art dealer. Then he worked for Wildstorm, where his job was to keep Alan Moore away from DC. Then he went over to IDW, where he is the one who is behind the artist editions.
Ooh.
He has turned in his notice. His last day of working there is Friday, and he will announce what he is doing next Monday. But it does mean that the artist editions from IDW are now done. I imagine he will be doing something for a different publisher or something involved in packaging. But those artist editions at IDW are just beautiful books. And the fact that he's not going to be overseeing them and putting them together anymore is something that makes me a little sad.
Yeah.
Even though I couldn't afford most of them. But I have bought the artisan editions, which are smaller, where they reprint the actual original art. But I've seen that EC artist's edition where everything's printed the same size as the original art. And it's one of those where I looked at it and went, I need to sell a kidney to get this. Thankfully, I did not do so. Was anybody here a fan of Funimation?
I'm a fan of Funimation.
Not a fan, but I had to suffer through it as a kid.
Guess what?
Funimation. Are we talking about the same Funimation? What the heck?
Funimation is no more.
What?
They closed their doors today. They have completely changed over to Crunchyroll. which means that leadership has changed, et cetera, et cetera. They're mostly going to be the Crunchyroll streaming service, but Funimation was kind of gobbled up by Crunchyroll, and the contracts all ended today. Wow. So the people who probably introduced you to anime in the 80s and 90s are now gone. This doesn't mean you're not going to be able to get your anime because, oh my gosh, there's anime everywhere. But it's another company that's kind of, you know, it has been swallowed up by a bigger company.
What's crazy is I have a Crunchyroll account also. I just typed in Funimation to see what would happen. And guess what? It took me to Crunchyroll.com.
Yep.
That's crazy.
And the last thing I am freaking on, artist Mark D. Bright, best known for his run on Iron Man with Michelinie and Bob Layton when they did their second run on Iron Man, and Quantum and Woody, passed away this week at age 66. He was never a hot artist, but he was one of those guys. And as you read about him, he was reliable. He loved working in comics. He loved everything about comics. And if you've not read Quantum and Woody from Valiant, go out of your way, pick those books up. It was the one Valiant book that I really, really loved because it didn't take itself seriously. It was a lot of fun to read, and a lot of it was because of Mark Bright's art. I've said for a while that we are losing our Bronze Age artists now. Most of the Silver Age artists have passed away. We're now starting to lose our Bronze Age artists. So when you go to a convention, when you go to a shop, be sure to thank the people who are there. Take the time to thank them. Take the time to get to know their stories, because yeah, even Dan Jurgens has got to be in his 60s by now, because he broke in back in 82, 83. And what was the book he broke in doing? Does anybody know?
Warlord.
Warlord. Got the job when Mike Grell was at one of the, what was it, Twin Cities Comics? Or was it a convention?
Don't know. I recall.
I think it was a signing at Twin Cities Comics.
No, it was a signing at St. Paul Comics.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. Because John Nunziata always had a picture of Dan signing stuff from Mike Grell. And then, of course, when Dan would tell his story, he would always get the wrong comic store where he met Mike Grell, which was like, ah, guy never remembers his past, does he? Which is funny because I was probably there at the store at the same time, but who did I know? Watch out, get out of the way, kid. I want to talk to my girl.
And now it's time for geeking. Eric, other than your store opening in a week and a half.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Hey, do you have a website attached to it?
I do. There's a website attached. If you go to it right now, it says under construction. You can put your email in there for updates, but the reason why it's under construction was because people were continuing to shop, and we're small, extremely small business right now. No staff, just me at this point in time, but we do have some staff coming back for open. But yeah, trying to field orders and trying to continue to keep things going on the ground here was getting difficult. So I had to block the website for a little bit. So that happened recently.
What is the website? Because remember, this is going to drop days before your shop opens.
Yeah, mindseyecomics.com. MindseyeComics.com.
So start out with the LGN figure story. I wrote that down. I want to hear this.
Oh, yeah. So as a kid in Kansas City growing up, you know, my parents would never buy those figures. They were so expensive, even back in the 80s. And I remember a couple of kids had a few of those, and you just look at them like, man, I wish I could have that. I want Hulk Hogan, you know. Sure enough, I never got them, right? And then I had the comic shop. I've been working and running the comic shop for a good three or four years at the time, by the time we were into COVID. And coming out of COVID, right? What was that, 2018? Yeah, so a good three years. And we're coming out of COVID. Well, by happenstance, you know, there were a lot of philanthropists that wanted to support small business, right? One in particular was the I'm leading into how I finally got my LJ in figures. I kind of made a jump there for the audience.
That's okay. You know, we got a couple hours left.
Yeah. Just keep going. Make this story, Eric, as long as you possibly.
I've got plenty of shots here. I'm ready to go.
So the
if Joe really wants the show to go long, he'll say, Corey, why don't you tell me about this part of Jack Kirby's career? Then he goes and he goes to the gas station.
Hit the Mall of America, come back a couple hours later, Corey's still going.
Jack Kirby. So anyway, I ended up wanting these figures, never got them. And I was like this close, like really close to just, you know, I was looking on eBay and I saw that people were, they were popping up. And I'm like, I should just, you know, start buying them. But they're expensive. They're like $200 and $300 for like a nice one and up from there. Well, anyway, by happenstance, I had the opportunity to get into conversation with Damon Lindelof, the writer and Holy producer cats. Of, yeah, of HBO's The Watchmen, as well as many other things. Lost, a lot of people know him from Lost, Prometheus, tons of stuff. So he, you know, reached out wanting to help the shop or whatever. So we hit it off pretty well in conversation. And LJN figures, like that was our, we kind of bonded over that because we're similar in age. And those were things that, you know, that were really important to us as kids growing up. So I text him the night he gets the Emmy for the HBO show, right? And I'm like, hey, you know, congrats, you know, much deserved, you know, on that. The show was epic. It was a good, you did a good job. And he says, oh, thank you. Keep an eye out. I sent a surprise your way. And I'm like, what? Like, you know, like, what are you talking about? Like, and he's like, yeah, just stay tuned. And I shit you not, like, all of a sudden I get this huge box from FedEx. Open it up, and it's like LJN series 1 and 2 figures, like all individually bubble wrapped.
Wow.
And I'm like, holy shit. And it's, there's a card in there that says your fan, Damon. And I'm like, dude, this is like the stuff of dreams. Like, this doesn't happen. And I was like proud of myself for being the responsible comic shop owner because I was tempted to spend money that I shouldn't be spending and buying them myself. And here it is. I stayed responsible, and then I was gifted them, and it felt that much better to receive that gift. And so they've been sitting in the box waiting to be displayed. I'm gonna set up a, you know, like a ring, and have them set up and put like, you know, the little acrylic case over it so everybody can come in and see all the WWF superstars, wrestling superstars from the 80s.
I might have a ring I can give you. I got it.
Do you?
We used to have a ring set up in the store, and we would put two figures in it, and it sounds like, oh, that's cool. No, I wanted to open my action figures. And
yeah,
we would have people vote on who would win. So, you know.
That's awesome.
And eventually, Jesse Ventura, LJN, won. And
Jesse the Body.
He never defended it again. So, but the best one was... We had the Matthew Broderick Godzilla. Now, this was a big deal because Target had a moratorium on these. You could not sell it before the movie was out because they wanted everybody to be surprised what it looked like. Well, we had a spy at Target who actually got us one. And so we put it under the box and said, if you want to ruin the surprise, lift the box, take a look at it. Some did, some didn't. And then the following week we had... That Godzilla versus the classic Godzilla. Well, it was like 52-2. Classic Godzilla stomped him. And the loser was a loser leave the shop. So I'll see what this, I can find. Dude, if I can find that, I'll bring it down.
That's awesome. We're going to keep that tradition going.
Now, you've still got that book that you had, a source exclusive that you had signed by everybody from the source, right?
Yes, that will be up on the wall in the shop.
I'm dying to see that.
Yeah, that's going to be up on the wall in the shop. Dude, we got to keep that. I need that ring, And we're going to keep that tradition going.
I will find
that
it.
That is awesome.
Let me write that down. Find the WWF ring. I'm pretty sure it's in the storage bin.
Because I got
it
everybody.
It might need to be re-roped, but like I said, I just got to get rid of this stuff one way or the other.
You know what's funny? My kids, like, so when I got that box, I just totally freaking lost. I just geeked out, man.
Oh, sweet.
I was just like, what the hell? And my kids, you know, I'm like naming all these characters. And for some reason, my daughter really loved Hillbilly Jim.
Hillbillies always do great in wrestling.
Yes.
I'm shocked that they don't have any currently.
I don't sing too well, but my pig don't sing a lot better.
That's right.
Well, I think the most recent was Jesse and Festus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, poor Festus, yeah, we find out, oh, yeah, he's, you know, this really good wrestler who has got, you know, been in Japan and everything. And it's like he gets to WWE and Vince says, all right, you're going to be a moron.
was that the guy ring the bell and he was unstoppable and you ring it again and he's like,
You know, and Iron Sheik is a local here. I mean, he passed away, you know, rip Iron Sheik. But he was local in the Twin Cities.
No, and it was Sheik Adnan LKC was local.
Oh, Sheik Adnan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the only. Oh my God.
There were a number of Sheiks. The AWA had Sheik Adnan LKC.
Welcome back to Detroit, it, folks. When wrestlers people start talking, besides, it's so painful. You got to get it out of our system.
In Detroit, they had the Sheik, who was Sabu's uncle.
Yeah.
And then the Iron Sheik was a guy out of New York in the WWF.
Right.
But everybody had a Sheik in the 70s because of the gas embargo. So it's okay, we need to have an Arab bad guy.
That's crazy. You want to know, speaking of Damon sending this, you know, so he was a wrestling fan as well. And so I'm like, well, who was your favorite? You know, we're talking about who's favorite. My favorite was I was a Hulk maniac. I was a Hulkster.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, Hulk Hogan all the way. And he was like Superfly Snuka. I'm like, what? Yep.
I mean, we are gonna
the number one guy before Hulk came in.
We are going to have to get together with Butch, and maybe we'll start a sidebar podcast where we just start talking wrestling. Because I've got wrestling stories I would love to spit out, but I'm like, that.
Okay. Well, can I share one more thing?
Sure. As many freakings as you want. Yeah.
So I'm excited for, you know, for new releases tomorrow. I know you didn't want to hear what's coming out tomorrow. But one that I really loved is the Saturday Morning Adventure releases by IDW. They've got an April special. It's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles April special coming out tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to grabbing that.
Spoilers.
I know. Spoilers.
Well, the one that's coming out for tomorrow that I'm excited about, except not all shops are getting it because it's Fantagraphics, the Atlas Comics Library Volume 2, Venus.
Oh, yes.
Nice. See, I love that you just mentioned, you know, like Atlas and or Fantagraphics, sorry, because that's the stuff that you would get at Mind's Eye. That's the stuff that you would get for sure at Big Brain. You know, absolutely. Do you guys remember 8-Ball?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel Close. Yep.
Yes. Man, that stuff was so awesome.
But, oh, those Atlas Library books are just beautiful. And after they put out the Joe Manili book, Fantagraphics said, yeah, we're making them all that big because they just look so much better at that size. So I don't know if I've told this, Joe. One of the next book after the next artist book, they're going to reprint every Al Williamson Atlas story. They finally got the last one. So it's going to be every story Al Williamson drew for Atlas during the 50s.
Nice.
Yeah. It's going to be a beautiful book. Joe, what are you geeking on? I
need more overtime. Oh, I've been reading rereading a lot of stuff and reading some new stuff. So it's kind of fun. And I like to post online. I don't really do, I mean, we do reviews, but I don't really talk reviews because, like, you know, Corey could, you know, just start him going on, how bad was Vince Coletta on Jack Kirby's art? And boom, there you go. 3-4 hours, you're gone. Sorry.
How bad was Vince Coletta on everybody's art?
We're on.
Somebody recently.
We're on.
Someone, Joe, I'm going to tell this story.
Oh, damn.
Someone recently posted Gil Kane's pencils on Facebook, and then the printed page that was inked by Coletta. And you just wanted to cry at how he had taken all of Gil Kane's, like, really dynamic art and just dulled it down to the point where it was a boring page. But then you look at Gil Kane's pencils and you're like, oh my God, this is the Flash beating a guy up. And it's so cool. And then here's the Vince Coletta page where it looks like it's from a goddamn coloring book. I want to go back in time and just punch him in the face. Okay,
Here's what I've been reading that I'm geeking on. Like I said, if I'm not reading, well, something happened at work. We've got new managers, and they decided that when my job basically consists of sitting at a computer screen, watching, waiting for luggage to pop up, and then I have to decide whether or not there's a bomb in it. It sounds facetious, but essentially that's true. What I do is some guys watch videos, some guys read books. I like to just listen to music. Well, we've got a new person. No one can be on their electronics. Have you ever just stared at a solid white screen for hours and not fallen asleep? Again, some of the smart people are realizing, okay, yeah, we get it. Some of you have electronic books. Until I can get back to listening to music, I've been pulling out books I've read already, but also reading some new stuff as well. So when I'm on the screen, you know, and nothing's going on, I can read something I've read before in the past. And recently I picked up a copy of Astro City Metro book number 1. The reason why I mention that is because, first of all, I have all the Astro City paperbacks, but I don't know what I don't have that's been published that hasn't been put in a previous book form through Vertigo or before with Image. The Metro books, I believe, were designed to cover everything.
Yes. And
maybe Corey, so like you said, we have Astro City 20 through 24 and then 28 through 60. What about the two in between? Okay, hopefully they'll be published later.
They're in a different book because they tie into those stories.
That's kind of what I was hoping. And again, I trust Kirk Puzak and everybody, Brent Anderson, everybody putting this together. So I did pick up the one, which almost guarantees you that super duper omnibus that we've ordered twice, that Image canceled before the previews was even done. It's going to come out, not this previews, but next previews, because now I'm going down the Metro book path. That said, I enjoyed this phenomenally because, yeah, I remember the first issues very vividly. I remember most of the Confessor storyline when we first found out about him. But there's so many different details you get when you reread Astro City. He puts the clues there, and then they pay off later. But again, like Corey says, when you're reading the books, yeah, that issue that's missing in Metro Book 1 ties into Metro Book 2 better. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. The weird thing is, and Eric, take this to heart, nobody in the Twin Cities, except one comic store, has them on their fucking shelves. So that said, I did read also, I had the expensive copies, and I'm not quite sure where I picked them up, of Batman 3 Jokers, the ones at the Colors.
Yes.
Wow. Just after going off a lighter book like Metro, the Metro books, Master City, this one was like a gut punch. It was, I mean, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised it was the Black Label, but I was like, oh, I heard so much about this. I know how it allegedly ends at 3 Jokers. Oh, no. No. If you're a Batman fan, you got to read this. I ain't a Batman fan, and I read it. What I did like is how they explain the different Jokers. I'm not going to go too much into it. That's one thing I hate about reviews is I want to get you interested enough to go buy it. I don't want to sit there and tell you everything about it, which is why the next one I'm just going to mention, I got through Kickstarter, latest Dreadstar book, which is, and of course I lost the picture of it. I think it's Inevitable. Hang on, I'll find the picture again. Thank God Corey can edit this shit. There we go. Dreadstar versus the Inevitable. Jim Starlin, Jamie Jameson. This is phenomenal. I got the Kickstarter hardcover. He autographed it. I got a bunch of fun stuff with it. Everybody's in it. And I'm not going to say anything about it, but just the fact that Marvel isn't using Jim Starlin is a fucking crime. Because this is
Jim Starlin doesn't want anything to do with Marvel.
Good for you, Jim. Good for you. You keep pumping out these Dreadstars and you got me on Kickstarter because this book was freaking phenomenal. No idea. I think if you go to his website now, and I don't know it, but again, I ordered it through Kickstarter. But if you go find it, just find it. Dreadstar versus the Inevitable. Beautiful book. Amazing story. And a genuine sense of, oh my God, where are they going with it next? Now, one thing Corey and I do, and again, last episode we said we're going to do previews this episode, but get it. Eric's reopening his shop, man. This is exciting stuff.
So next episode, exciting.
next episode will probably be previews, but I got something I want to talk about now. So if you've got your previews with you and you were all ready to go and now you're going nuts thinking, I got to wait. How many days until Mind's Eye's open? Go to page 272 under Cartoon Books, Thorn, the complete proto-bone college strips from 82 to 86 and other early drawings. Buy it. If you're a bone person, buy it. If you like Jeff Smith, buy it. I did the Kickstarter. I read it. Oh, my God. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. A lot of differences. If you've ever read, oh, I would say his name wrong. Bloom County.
Breathed,
thank you. He did a book of his proto comics, you know, his college strips. I just finished reading University 2, Frank Cho's college strips. So you read those and you also read Liberty Meadows, you read Bloom County, you read Bone, you see repeated storylines, because again, not a lot of people have seen the early Thorn unless you happen to be at the Ohio State University and reading the newspaper, The Lantern. Matter of fact, his first comic that he published, he took some of these strips and he published it. Only 500 copies. I saw one on eBay. Guy wants $60,000 for it. Jeff, if you got any out there, you might want to just start selling them on eBay. This book was phenomenal. You're going to see things that you've seen in the Bone strip. For one thing, Thorn is way wilder, way sexier. In all three strips I've talked about, all three books, this is college. You're going to talk about drugs. You're going to talk about beer. You're going to talk about sex. You know, they're going to mix in some politics of the day. I was so enamored with this book. I read it in a single day, which is really weird because I usually try not to rush through things, but I just couldn't wait to finish it. He talks about the history of how he set up this strip, what happened to it afterwards. There are some little tidbits, like when the editors of Ohio State decided they wanted to try something different to bring somebody, other cartoonists in. So he did a 5-strip. It got published, but he doesn't even remember it. He's like, I don't remember how this was published. And at the end, he tried to get into syndication, and he talks a bit about that. So it's historical. It's just a lot of fun to read. And guess what I'm reading now? I waded into Bone. I'm rereading my whole Bone saga. And like I do when I read Astro City, when I'm rereading Bone, it's like, yeah, I can't remember the Great Cow Race, but there's a lot of things I don't remember. So rereading stuff is just a lot of fun. There, you got this is the first time, Corey, I think we've ever done an advanced previews for a previews episode. So, anyway.
600 and some episodes later, we're still breaking ground.
We're breaking new ground. I love it. Corey, wind us up, baby. What are you geeking on? Oh, did you know, Eric,
we think WrestleMania is coming here next year. Have you heard that?
I've heard this.
So the reason, and we've talked about this before, the Minneapolis Council passed a large bond or whatever to spend money on certain certain sports events, including an unnamed one for next April. Nice. We'll find out by the time this podcast if they're coming or not.
I'm excited about it.
Oh, I'm on it.
One wrestling match I did see when we moved to the Twin Cities, I got to see Coco Beware, and I'm trying to think who else was there. But we did go to a wrestling match here years ago.
I'm an old AWA guy because they were the territory here. So I saw Hulk Hogan when he came in, and he was a heel, but then he got reinvented as a face.
He's good now.
Yeah, he showed up with Johnny B. Good. No, not Johnny B. Good. Johnny Valentine, the manager, and they were trying to sell him. But And this was when Rocky.
Did you go see him as Terry?
No, he came in as Hulk Hogan. Nope, never saw him in that.
He used to play at Hot Shots Bowl or whatever.
Oh God, yeah, we're getting too far the wrestling hole. we're the reason why the Road Warriors were faces. We're actually kind of anti-heroes because they wanted them to be the bad guys, and they had them fight against Bern von Raschke and the Crusher, who had the belt, but. We had nothing about it. We'd never seen anything like the Road Warriors, and we cheered them on.
That's right, Hawk and Animal.
Oh yeah, yeah. They were here before they got signed up with Paul Ellering and Rocco.
Okay, Joe, are you ready for our milestone?
I is.
This is episode 637.
Oh my God! Ah!
Whoa!
I wasn't ready for it.
We have now surpassed Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke had 635 episodes.
Take that, Gunsmoke.
Are you talking about like Gunsmoke with Festus?
Yes. It had 20 seasons, 635 episodes, not counting the radio show. But we have surpassed Gunsmoke. We are on our way to take down The Simpsons. My other geekings. Every so often, I get nostalgic. And I go on eBay and I will look for mad paperbacks, as I talked earlier today. And people are selling off, you know, lots. I always look for lots because I'm not going to buy one mad paperback for $9.99 when somebody is selling 15 of them for $20. So I was on the eBay. I got 15 of them for $20. The shipper was wonderful. He had them at my house within 3 days, which is amazing. But the thing about it is it's got, let's see, 1, 2, 3 Don Martin books. A book I had never seen before, the Mad Pet book, which was drawn by Paul Coker. Let's see, a couple of Dave Berg books, which I'll probably give away to somebody because the older I get, the less I want. I think I've told this story before. Dave Berg is one of those guys. When I was a kid, I was always like, why is he in Mad? His stuff just doesn't fit. His is all, you know, dad jokes and suburban dad.
Good, I'll take them. Yeah, you got, I love Dave Berg.
And I found out that at Mad, he was the biggest egocentric artist there. I mean, think about the artist they had, and Dave Berg often said, yo, I'm the only good thing in this magazine. But it's also got the weird cover, and I will put this cover up as when we do it on the Facebooks. Mad Strikes Back, the one that was printed in 1970. This reprints the Mad as a comic. So it's got all this Harvey Kurtzman stuff and everything. But the cover is this weird 60s biker thing. And it's one of those where if you go to the people the Mad cover sites, the worst Mad covers ever, it always comes in at number one. But I've got a whole bunch of Mad paperbacks to read. The second thing I am geeking on, this is WrestleMania week. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, WrestleMania, yeah, it's 2 days and it's really big. And it is, become this monster. But what most people don't know is every independent company that can will run shows in and around the area. Because it's, hey, we've got over 100,000 wrestling fans who fly in from all over the world. WWE has the WWE Access, which is kind of like a convention. They have booths and autographs and this and that. There's also WrestleCon, which is a wrestling convention that will have wrestling shows at the convention. So if you have a former WWE person that you like and they're not going to be at WWE Access, they're probably going to be at WrestleCon. Then there's, GCW, which used to be Jersey Pro Wrestling, they're running 15 shows between Thursday and Saturday. There's all these other groups that are running shows. I will be covering, starting tonight, because as soon as we're done, I have to write up the NWA show, 15 wrestling shows between Tuesday night and Sunday afternoon. For PWInsider.com. I've taken days off to do this, but you literally, if you have Triller TV, which is, I think, what, $9.99 a month or $6.99 a month, all the GCW shows, all the this and that, and those shows are there. You can literally watch live pro wrestling every day from 10 in the morning till 3, till 10 in the morning till 3 the next morning. Because they're running shows that much. So if WrestleMania comes to the Twin Cities, imagine how much wrestling there will be, because you'll have GCW, you'll have TNA shows up, Ring of Honor shows up. Then you've got all the local groups that are going to show, like First Wrestling, MAW. I imagine that, the American Wrestling Federation. Those are three Minnesota groups that'll run for sure. There'll probably be a bunch of others that are smaller that will run. I could literally start watching wrestling last night and watch wrestling all the way through till Sunday night at around 1 in the morning and just stop to sleep. So if you're a wrestling fan, oh my gosh, there's so much wrestling. But by Sunday afternoon, I will usually text people and go, I am so sick of wrestling now.
Heretic!
I think last year, I covered 10 shows. And by Sunday, it was like, I never want to type. They lock up collar and elbow, move to waist locks, then move to arm bars, run the ropes, and blah, blah, blah gets taken down with their shoulder tackle. Because that's how every match started. And then the last thing I am geeking on, it has a caveat.
It's a good strategy.
DC is going to have a line of books much like the Marvel Epic line. I actually told Joe about 2 weeks ago, we should do a show about what if DC did an Epic line. What would they publish? Well, they're doing it.
It's stealing our ideas. We've given away millions of dollars. Did they even bother to? We don't even have a Wikipedia page. And we're a national treasure.
We didn't even get this one done before they stole it. It is being called DC's Finest. And it's going to be the same format as the Marvel. My only caveat, the only thing I don't like about it is they're publishing a lot of stuff that's already been in print. So I'm going
to. Isn't that what it is?
No, I mean, these are trade paperbacks that have already been printed.
Oh.
So the announcement is, first off, we're going to have Superman, The Coming of Superman, which is the first set of Golden Age stories. Those have been reprinted more times than I've had Chinese food. The Flash, the Human Thunderbolt, which is, again, the first stories of the Flash. Batman, year one and year two. They're going to publish the year one and year two in these. Now, Catwoman is interesting. It's Catwoman Lifelines, which is going to be the Jim Ballant run they're starting with. And then Wonder Woman is Origins and Omens. They're going to be publishing the Wonder Woman series that started in 2007. Other books they're planning are Justice League, All-Star Superman. Those are the ones that have leaked already. Justice Society. Now, the Justice Society one is one that's going to be really cool because it's starting with the original Justice Society in All-Star Issue 3 back in 1941. Now, I already have those because I have the run of All-Star Comics that came out in the DC archives, but I think it's really cool that, hey, you want to read Justice Society from the 40s, we're going to have a trade paperback that's around $40 that'll reprint the first 2 years worth of stories. What I would like to see is for them to sort of look at what they haven't reprinted. Like, why not start with the Batman stories after the Batman TV series went off the air and they gave the book to Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams?
Or the Plastic Man collection.
Yeah. Although Plastic Man is public domain, and you can get all your Plastic Man stories from our friends over at Guandanoland Comics. Sadly, really? You can't get it through shops because Guandanoland self-publishes, and if they went through a distributor, their $40 books would end up being like $80. But yeah, wow. Guandanoland Comics has all of that. All the Plastic Man stuff from the 40s into the 50s, because they're public domain. And you can also download it at Comic Book Plus, because it's public domain. That means we all own it. I'd like to see them, you know, how about the Justice League, starting with Len Wein's run in 1970. Those haven't been printed before. The Legion of Superheroes, they've reprinted the Great Darkness Saga a bunch of times. Why not start with the stories that come after that? Or Teen Titans. Yes, they've reprinted Teen Titans, but it's been in the omnibuses, which are, you know, $140 to $150 bucks. How about reprinting those in these? I think hopefully they will start doing like Marvel does, which is, okay, we're going to do all of our main series. We're going to start with the ones that are kind of either the ones that we know are going to sell forever, like Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, or we're going to jump on stuff that we think there's a market for, like they're doing with the modern epics. You know, okay, here's Bendis's Avengers, here's Deadpool, here's Spider-Gwen, stuff like that. I like these books. And I really hope that they use this to sort of get the older stuff that hasn't been drilled into our heads over and over and over again out in print. Believe it or not, kids, we've talked about funny books for almost 2 hours.
Woohoo! Jeez!
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Eric! Plug your store's opening one more time.
My Die Comics opening this April 13th, Saturday, April 13th. Dan Jurgens will be there from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., but we will be open all day from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Come check it out.
There will be coffee. There will be comics. Yeah. There will be cosplayers. There will be a DJ. There will be more comics than you can buy, so bring your money.
I can buy a lot.
There'll be a lot of sales, so stay tuned to the social media. I'm going to start, as we're leading into the days counting down, start posting, like, yeah, we're going to have this on sale, that on sale, get some of these back issues. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And do you have anything big for Free Comic Book Day?
Free Comic Book Day.
Which is less than a month away.
I know, not yet. It's so close around the corner. We plan on participating. We plan on having the free comics, but I don't have the event locked down yet as to what it's going to be.
Mind's Eye Comics.
Dancing Girls.
Go to Facebook, look for Mind's Eye Comics. You'll know before we do.
Yep.
Facebook. And we will have all sorts of links in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course. This was a ton of fun. Joe.
All right. What do you call a boomerang that does not come back? A stick. All right, everybody. We've had a lot of fun. Have a great day. Corey, hit my music.
Done, bitches!